It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and today we're talking about bike safety. Over the summer, there have been some very disturbing news stories about people being killed on their bicycles in Anchorage. And for those of us who enjoy bikes for recreation or for getting around town, those kinds of stories hit home, and you start thinking about your own safety. So today's show is to explore the safety of biking around Anchorage, how we could make it safer as individuals and as a community, and the topic of using bikes for transportation and to be fit, and how we want to make sure the roads are safe for everyone. And I've got three guests with me today. In the studio is Mark Mew, the chief of police in Anchorage. Thanks for being with us, Chief.
Well, thank you for having me on, Charles.
On the phone from Portland, Steve Durant of Alta Planning and Design. He's a national expert on designing communities for bicycles and pedestrians as well as cars. Thanks for being with us, Steve Durant.
You bet. Thank you.
And Steve Cleary is also in the studio representing Bike Anchorage and got here on his bicycle today.
I did.
And before we started the show and before I give out those numbers for you to participate, I wanted to just say something on behalf of KSKA and Alaska Public Media and certainly myself, the very, very sad news that we received last night and this morning in the newspaper about Marvell Johnson, who is the host of Soul to Soul, a show that that started on our air in the very first year that KSKA was broadcasting. We think that it was probably the first show and the longest running show on the station. And so like a longtime member of our family, and I was talking with BD Trantina this morning. I volunteered at KSK in that first year, and she started in that first year, and Marvell was the only other one who's still around from that long ago. But so much more important, what a remarkable man he was. Just somebody who made everyone around him feel good and feel positive, and who devoted so much to this community. It's almost it's hard to believe that his life would have been taken so suddenly when he had contributed so much to others. And my heart and that of everyone else here at KSK goes out to his family and to the huge community of people he mentored and who he contributed to over the years. Just a remarkable man, and so a very sad day to realize that he's gone. So I thought I just wanted to say that at the top of today's show and a remembrance for Marvell. And now we're going to go on with our planned show, which is also a very serious one, Anchorage bike fatalities. We've lost people in the last year for no other reason other than they were on their bicycles. And as we move towards a more bike using community, a community where we get around more on bicycles, I think everyone's concerned to make sure that we're not taking our life in our hands when we're just trying to get across town. And so that's what we'll be talking about. And we welcome your contributions to the conversation as to how you feel when you're cycling around Anchorage. How do you think it could be made more safe? What are some of the concerns and questions that you have for our panel? The number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we've already got some emails, so we'll be getting to those in just a minute, and we look forward to hearing your calls. But first, I wanted to start with Steve Cleary from Bike Anchorage. Steve, it seems to me that biking is increasing as a way of getting around Anchorage. It's more and more a form of transportation. People might not expect that in our normal northern climate, but it's a way that you get around town, right?
It definitely is. Yeah, I really like biking around town, and I appreciate the show today. Thanks for having me on. I've been a lifelong bike commuter. I actually biked up here in 1998 from Minnesota and have made it my home ever since. Yeah, and I didn't worry about safety and bike safety so much then. It just was something that I did every day. But now that I'm a father, I think of my parents thinking about me back then and worrying about my safety. And that's really brought it home to me, as my now 6-year-old son really loves to bike, and we go out and bike a lot. So that's one of the reasons I helped found Bike Anchorage, which used to be called the Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage, in 2008. And really why I want people both to go by bike, but to have safety when they do it. And as we talk today, I want to make sure that we keep focusing on that human element. You know, we'll talk a lot about statistics, design, law, but you know, bicyclists, just like drivers, are somebody's husband or wife, somebody's son or daughter, somebody's grandparent. And we need to keep that in mind, that bicyclists, drivers, we're all members of the same community, and we need to share the road.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel when you're on your commute? I mean, do you feel like you need to really be highly aware, because drivers maybe are not aware of you and of your safety?
I definitely think so, and I've taken more and more steps to drive defensively, to make myself conspicuous with my bright orange coat or the lights that blink, and really taking that seriously, because as Chief Mew has pointed out many times, when there is a collision between bikes and cars, even, no matter who's right or wrong, the bicyclist is in a more vulnerable position. And so as a bicyclist, you need to take that responsibility to try to make yourself more conspicuous and to drive defensively and to try to anticipate things and make sure that you're safe.
Mm-hmm. And as we go forward in the show, we'll talk about some of those in specific as to, for cyclists who are listening, how can you be safe? So, Chief Mark Mew, you're a cyclist yourself.
I am. I maybe not as rigorous as Steve here, but yeah. But I am on my bike every day.
And you're also in some degree responsible for keeping us safe on the roads. And we've had three tragedies this year with cyclists who were killed. Do you feel like there are issues or themes that we should be thinking about as a community in terms of keeping bikers safe that maybe we weren't sufficiently aware of?
Well, I have lots of thoughts on that topic. First of all, this year we've had three bicycle fatalities so far. We have charged criminally in two of them, and one of them there will not be criminal charges filed. And they were all tragedies. Distracted driving played a role in one, possibly two of them, alcohol in one of them. But there are lessons for cyclists and drivers as well. I think Steve touched on it here a moment ago. There are more and more cyclists in town now. Like it or not, there are going to be these conflicts. And as cycling grows in popularity, as winter biking becomes popular, you know, fat bikes and studded tires and things we didn't see before have gotten cyclists out during the dark, cold months. The town didn't appear to be ready for that. The drivers weren't ready for it. I think some of the cyclists weren't ready for the ramifications of what they were doing. So we, you know, bicyclists have to become safer and better citizens, and our motoring drivers have to become better as well. And both, it shouldn't be a war between the two camps. Bicycles are legal on the streets. There's ways cyclists should ride when they're on the streets, and that's different cycling behavior than when they're on the multi-use trails. We need to start getting some of these distinctions understood within the cycling community, but we also have to get the motoring community to understand that cyclists are going to be there, and there are some things they need to do as well.
Right, and that's what I think something we're trying to do on today's show is to start get that information out there as to how to do it. It also seems like a big challenge because there's no way to address all cyclists and all drivers to get them to be aware of a new situation on the road, and it's different than the way it used to be.
Yes, and what we're trying to simplify the message, and the message I try and put out, at least to the cycling half of the equation, is decide whether you're going to be a car or a pedestrian. If you're going to be in the street, be a car. Ride fast. Use all the rules of the road that you would in a car. That means if you're going to turn left at the intersection, you get in the left lane. Take the lane if you need to take the lane. Behave like a car. If you're going to be a pedestrian, then you're going to go slow, then you get out of the road. Get over on the sidewalk, get on the multi-use path, but then you're going to be going slow. If you want to maintain your right-of-way at driveways and intersections, then you got to use the crosswalks. You got to slow down to a reasonable and prudent speed. You aren't allowed to get tangled up with dogs on leashes and kids on skates and walkers. You can't go 20 miles an hour. And what above all, you got to be consistent. You can't be hopping from one mode to the next, off in the street for a few minutes, back on the sidewalk, back on the street, back on the sidewalk. The drivers and pedestrians alike have to predict what you're about. So you need to telegraph, you know, what mode you're in. Mm-hmm. You're a car or you are a pedestrian.
Yeah, interesting. Well, we'll have a lot more of that to talk about as we go on. But I'd also like to turn to Steve Durant, who's with us from Alta Planning and Design in Portland. And Steve works with communities all over the country and designed to create safe facilities for pedestrians and cyclists. Steve, what kind of trends are you seeing nationwide? Is it there's certainly a lot more cyclists on the street in Anchorage than there used to be. Is that true in other cities as well?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's really growing all across the country in big cities and small towns and in rural countryside. There are a lot more people choosing to get around by bike and walking for, you know, all the good reasons that we talked about. It's healthy. It gives people options for how to get around. And one of the things we're seeing in cities that are seeing increasing number of cyclists is the motorists are becoming more aware that they need to be looking for cyclists and for pedestrians for that matter. And that's causing a huge change in how safe it is for everybody to use the roadway. You know, I think it's true what the chief was saying about pick your mode. Are you going to ride like a pedestrian or ride like a cyclist? We really try to discourage people from riding on sidewalks because of the conflicts with pedestrians and motorists not expecting cyclists on sidewalks where they're crossing driveways and crossing intersections. So we really try to encourage people to stay on the road, but to operate predictably there. And we're seeing in cities that have growing numbers of people cycling that the motorists are getting it. They're starting to look a little bit for cyclists and more careful about how they treat their car, for that matter, and the city, and using the town that they live in, and really respecting their fellow community members.
How important an element is design in safety for cyclists? Is it a critical element, even more important than these behavioral things, or is it true that, you know, sort of whatever the design, you could be safe if you pay attention?
Oh, a design on the roadway, of the roadway
right,
facilities,
the road,
really important.
Mm-hmm.
It's hugely important, and we've been, for decades, we've been stuck with some really old-fashioned facilities that were really designed for the benefit of motorists. And just in the last couple of years, our company and a National Association of City Transportation Officials has published a guideline that brings some much more variety in the types of facilities and some continuity in types of facilities, including signals that are specialized for bicyclists and different kinds of signing and striping and design that makes it a lot safer for cyclists and how they use the roadway.
All right, and we'll get more into design as we go forward in the show, but I'd like to take a call right now. We have Bob on the lot. Oh, I guess we've lost Bob. Well, try calling back Bob and other folks who want to get on the air with us. The number is 550-8433, 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752 to talk about bike safety and making sure that we are all safe when we're using our roads and sidewalks. Here's an email that came in from Jeff. I'm curious why the city puts in traffic calming features at intersections like those on Lower Road between Spruce and Elmore. And I have to say, I'm not familiar with that. He says they're atrocious for cyclist safety. The rider has a bike lane, but then has to swerve into the car lane at every intersection. Simply an awful design for cyclists. Actually, we have this on Arrow Avenue, which is near where I live, where the road goes narrower and wider. So there's essentially a lane that feels like a bike lane, but then as we get to the intersection, it kind of necks in to be narrower, which I think is designed to get cars to slow down, but it sort of feels like it's pushing you into the road. Steve, did you want to comment on that?
Well,
Steve,
I certainly have seen that in biking around Anchorage, of course, and there's an increasing amount of bike lanes. I typically commute in, at least in part, on A Street, and there's a new bike lane there. I'm happy to report, but that's one of the challenges, I would say, with Anchorage is that the bike lane may come and go. There may not be a bike lane at all. And so, as Chief Mew alluded to earlier, it might involve, if you're feeling unsafe, that you have to take the lane as a bicyclist and get out there so that cars know where you are and you can be seen and be predictable. So I'm happy to report that bike lanes are on the increase after, you know, the adoption of the bike plan in 2010. But there are a lot of narrow roads around Anchorage that aren't going to have bike lanes for a while. And so it takes that adaptation of the cyclists and the awareness of the motorists that cyclists are there to share the road.
Let me underline that, because I've noticed that if you try to ride along the right side of the traffic lane, Chief Mew, cars will try to get around you in that lane, and you'll have maybe a foot between you and the car. So what you're saying is it's right in the middle of the lane, and if they want to go around you, they change lanes, and if they can't, they just have to slow down. Is that essentially what you need to do when you're in traffic?
Well, if you have the right kind of road, I will ride on to the right side of the right lane, mm-hmm. and I let people pass me.
They sort of on the shoulder, me. Right.
Yeah. But, you know, you're going along, and you could have obstructions, gravel, chuck holes. You could have parked cars, and mm-hmm. you're afraid of getting doored. When those things happen, a cyclist that is practiced knows to look over his or her shoulder, try and make eye contact, signal what they're going to do, and then get out and take that lane and do it in a decisive way so that people know, oh, okay, I can't pass him now. He's got the lane. And that's legal to do. And sometimes, of course, if you're going to be turning left up ahead, you're going to have to take two or three lanes and get into the left-hand turn lane. So you can do it both ways. And it kind of depends on what the roadway is throwing at you in terms of hazards. And I'd agree with the outside Steve's comment that he made here a minute ago about being uncomfortable on sidewalks. I, too, am uncomfortable on sidewalks. I've been hit twice in Anchorage by cars coming out of driveways.
They're not looking for cyclists to come along.
They're not looking yet. They want to cross the sidewalk and then start looking for cyclists in the street mm-hmm. or opposing traffic in the street, and they're usually turning right and looking only left. The problem in Anchorage, one of the problems, is often you'll be on a multi-use trail someplace, and eventually that trail comes up into a developed area and empties out onto a sidewalk, and it'll put you in a counterflow situation. There won't be sidewalks on both sides of the street, and suddenly you find yourself on a sidewalk in a counterflow situation, and that is deadly. And I think that was the scenario that hit me the two times that I've been hit. Mm-hmm. I don't anymore. If I don't get eye contact plus a thumbs up or an okay sign or some actual symbol of recognition from the driver, I just stop. That's it.
I would just underline that eye contact thing, that when I've seen cars hit cyclists, and I've almost done it myself. When you're turning and you're, as you say, you're looking left because you're turning right, you're not really concentrating on what's coming at you from the other direction on that sidewalk, and the cyclist unfortunately needs to get your attention, and thank God I've never actually hit anyone, but I can certainly see how that would happen. So let's go to John. Yeah, go ahead.
Both of you made comments that are really interesting. One that the chief just made about where a trail ends and you have to get on the street. And then, Steve, you were also talking about facilities that are starting and stopping. And that's one of the things when we're designing facilities, we're really looking at is what we call the transitions from one type of facility to another and trying to figure out how to make it safe and how to introduce people onto the roadway in a way that's safe so that they're going the right direction on the right side of the street. You should always be cycling with traffic on the right side of the street, never against traffic on the wrong side. So that's one of the important things, is figuring out how to make sure that those transitions are worked out.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Let's go to John, who's calling in. John, did you have a question or comment?
I did. I wanted to talk about the difference between 8-foot and 10-foot wide lane. I just read an article recently about some cities transitioning from 10-foot wide lanes, vehicle lanes, to 8-foot wide, and thereby actually allowing a larger or a bike lane to be put in on the same streets where there may not be one at the current time. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Right. Steve Durant, can you comment on the width of lanes, how wide traffic lanes need to be?
Well, yeah. Now, for parking lanes, we're seeing some parking lanes get as narrow as 8 or even 7 feet. But as far as traffic lanes go, we rarely see them go below 10 feet. It's much more common for cities to be building 12 and even 14-foot lanes, and we're really trying to get those down to 10 and 11 feet. Now, maybe in a case where there's a left turn lane or or a kind of combined left turn lane in the center of a roadway that could conceivably get down to 9 feet, but that would be really unusual. But it's really true we're seeing more lanes get narrower so that we can add wider shoulders or wider bike lanes or even buffered bike lanes. And the safety benefits are multiplying there, not just because we're creating extra facilities or additional lanes for other types of traffic for cyclists, but also because motorists are use the cues that they get from that new narrower lane to slow down. We're actually seeing motorists slowing if the lanes are narrower.
That psychological factor. Yeah. It's Hometown Alaska, and we're talking about bike safety in Anchorage in light of fatalities have happened over the last year. We have three experts with us. Steve Durant, you just heard from, who's in Portland. He's with Alta Planning and Design. Anchorage Police Chief Mark Muse in the studio, and Steve Cleary of Bike Anchorage. And we'd love to hear more from you if you have questions or comments on this topic. You can reach us by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org, or you can get on the air and ask a question or make a comment. The number is 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. We've talked quite a bit about cyclist behavior, and we haven't talked too much about driver behavior. And two of the fatalities that have occurred, obviously, driver behavior was key, Chief. I mean, there was one where I guess the driver was texting or using a cell phone and killed a child. And then another one in which a young person was, I don't know if there was a distracted behavior there or just an inexperienced driver who was using alcohol, backed over a really well-loved and well-known athlete here in Anchorage, Jeff Dusenberry. And I'm wondering if we talk to cyclists about keeping safe. Their lives are on the line. They'll probably be listening to us. Is there any way we can get across to drivers the importance of being more safe and more aware of cyclists?
Well, naturally, education is key to this thing. And in a way, your show right now is this kind of thing we would like to do a lot of. We are at the Anchorage Police Department. We're trying to join forces with Bike Anchorage and the League of American Cyclists and other organizations to try and work to get the message out. I shouldn't forget to leave out the Alaska Injury Prevention Center. So we've been doing a lot of educational things, and we have new bike laws here. We haven't yet done as much as I think we could to get some of these new laws out and understood, but we are making strides in that direction. We had a big meeting about 2 weeks ago, the AMATS crowd, that's our local transportation plan, they have money for advertisement and media campaigns to help educate folks. And we've got some really unusual ideas coming out, and I don't want to jump the gun on them quite yet. Some of them are, I think, pretty cool, but I'd be out of place to announce them at this point. But we are working hard on that.
Yeah. So you mentioned new laws. What are the new laws?
Well, we got a 3-foot law now, for instance. That law means that if you are going to, a driver is going to pass a cyclist, you're required to give 3 feet. So that's new. It's pretty, I think it's pretty standard around the country as for bike laws, but we didn't have it here. The other thing that's new is the reasonable and prudent speed for cyclists crossing driveways and crossing intersections. Now, normally you have the right-of-way, technically, but you will forfeit that right-of-way if you go jetting across. In other words, an automobile leaving a driveway, hopefully they do look, but if they do look, they're expecting to see pedestrian speeds coming at them. If you're doing 25 miles an hour, they're not looking far enough down the road. And so if you don't slow down, you will lose that right-of-way. So that's new in our law as well.
Hmm. We now have John who's calling in. John, did you have a question about the rules of the road or a comment?
Yes, I did. Is there anything in the current laws or proposed laws that bicyclists must go through a licensing program, sort of like a driver's training or to be licensed for operating a bicycle, and then about insurance, because quite frankly, I see so many bicyclists that do not obey the law, you know, cutting from one side of the street to the other, going kitty corner on intersections and things like that. It's like, you know, it's sort of like if you think about a skateboarder having a grand time going down a hill, they're just not paying attention. And I think there needs to be some onus by the bicyclist. Just a question, and see what transpires.
Yeah, well, there's no license obviously to ride a bike, but you do cite people who break the law, right, Chief?
Correct. There's no currently under the law. There's no requirement to have a license or to have insurance. Although I hear people talk about that quite a bit. But the bottom line is, if you commit a traffic infraction, you can and sometimes are cited. The police can and do write citations.
And I would like to say that as Bike Anchorage has evolved, we formed to encourage bicyclists and motorists to follow the rules. So we're teaching cyclists how to ride safely and how to follow the rules. And one interesting program that's being pioneered by the Alaska Injury Prevention Center is to get into schools and teach bike safety in seventh grade before students learn how to drive, with the hope that they will be cyclists, but they'll also learn to be better drivers looking for cyclists because they've had that education. We'd also like to get some more driver education about cyclists in the DMV manual and in the tests there to make it more a regular part of what people see when they are driving or applying for a driver's license. But we're here to say that we accept the rights and the responsibilities of sharing the road.
Right. Thanks. Good call. Bob, I think we lost you before. We've got you back. Did you have a question or comment?
Yeah. I was wondering exactly how many bicyclists are cited compared to cars, because I see guys riding the wrong way down one-way ramps. I see them with kids on the back of their bicycles. Middle of the winter, summertime, doesn't matter. They're going the wrong way down the street. You know, I ride a bicycle. I follow the law. But there's a large percentage of guys who don't do that. They just do whatever they want. And I'm the one in jeopardy because I'm the one who's insured and licensed to operate a motor vehicle. And when they make me make a mistake, it's my mistake. But I don't see them getting cited at all.
All right, let's ask the chief that. Do you cite very many cyclists?
I can't tell you a number off the top of my head. I can ask, I can go, we have systems to track what we write tickets for, so I can get an answer for that, but I can't give it to you off the top of my head.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Bob. I understand the sentiment that you're after there. And I think that there's also, I mean, some of this stuff is probably pretty hard to cite. A guy zooming along on a bike and you're a cop in a car, just as it's hard to cite somebody for using their cell phone in the car some of these other things. There's so much about behavior that's necessary that the cops can't really make us do everything.
Well, I don't want to send you the impression that we do a lot of them, a lot of those citations. And some of the with all kinds of traffic problems, not just bicycles. You know, when you're driving a marked unit, people tend to behave when you're around them. So when the cops are driving, everybody tends to follow the law. And when the cops aren't there, people tend to do what they want to do.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob. We're going to go to one more.
On a bicycle last breakup, he was in front of eight cars in the middle of the lane, and he was doing maybe 20, and there was, you know, backing up traffic during rush hour, and he was on his cell phone. And there was a bike path that was open to him, and there was a guy on the bike path just watching this guy.
All right. Thanks, Bob. We're going to go to another caller. We've got a ton of callers and emails and want to get one more before the break. Lana, did you have a comment?
Yes, I do. I was addressing bicycle safeties. A couple years ago, was going down Lake Otis, crossed the Tudor intersection. There was a bicyclist on the other side of the street. I proceeded down the street and was going to make a right-hand turn onto 42nd, looked up behind me, nobody was coming. I had just slowed down considerably. I made the turn. Halfway through it, something hit me. It was a bicyclist. He was screaming and hollering, kicked my car. People came out to help and intercede. In a way, we waited for the police officers to come, and this man finally admitted that he always went through that intersection. He just let it go from Tudor and just freewheeled it down as fast as he could. I could not see him because when I looked in my mirror, he was at the top further up the street. I figured I had time. There was no idea in my head this man was going about 30 miles an hour when he hit me.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he damaged my car, and the police never did show up. And Captain Muse, you're not going to like this, but as I went further down the street to leave a half hour later, there were five units parked, and all the officers were standing there talking.
All right.
So I got a cell phone of my own because the man was so crazy, he scared the living daylights out of me.
All right. Well, thanks, Lana. That sounds like a really bad experience. I don't know, Chief, do you want to respond to that? Obviously, you don't have any information about this particular incident.
I would have to get dates and times and look at it and see if we did something wrong or if the call was just in stack and we got there 20 minutes after she left.
Right.
You know, I don't know the circumstances.
Lana, if you want to send
me
an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org, I will forward it to the chief. And right now we're going to take a break for about a minute. We're going to be back. We've got lots of other additional folks who have questions about our topic of Anchorage bike fatalities. And we've got an expert panel here to answer those questions. And after the break, I'll also give out our phone numbers and email address again if you want to get on the air. It's Hometown Alaska. Stay with us as we continue.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is Anchorage bike fatalities, the dangers to cyclists, how we can make Anchorage roads safer. And I think we established in the first half that there's a dual responsibility, a responsibility for cyclists and for drivers. And then there's also issues about design, how to make the roads safer and make it so that everyone is in the right place and has the help they need to psychologically navigate our streets. We've got a great panel to talk about this. Steve Cleary is with Bike Anchorage. Mark Mew is with the Anchorage Police Department, where he's the chief of police. Steve Durand is with us from Portland. He's with Alta Planning and Design. And lots of calls and questions. If you'd like to get on the air with us, our number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, you can make the call toll-free at 888-353-5752, and you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Steve Durant, there's a video that's going around that shows, I think it's Belgium or the Netherlands, where there's so many bikes on the road that you hardly see any cars, and no one's wearing a helmet, and it's, I guess, very, very safe because the bikes are sort of dominant. How do you see an increase? When you see more cyclists on the road nationally, do you see the number of accidents increase, stay the same, or go down? Just my naive impression was that as we were getting more cyclists on the road in Anchorage, we're getting more accidents. But you were saying before the show began that that's not always the pattern.
Well, yeah, that would be the logical. More cyclists, there should be more people having crashes. But actually, City of Portland tracks the statistics pretty carefully, and they have been since they started getting religion about cycling only less than 20 years ago. And what they found was the crash rate, number of fatalities actually stayed almost exactly the same for the period when they were making some improvements in bike facilities, and they had a great way of counting how many cyclists were out there because there are a number of bridges that people have to go across. And as the number of cyclists increased, maybe tenfold from way down in the low single, you know, tenths of a percent to many, several percent of trips, up to 10% of trips or so. The actual number of crashes and the number of fatalities stayed about the same. Now, I really want to emphasize that in the scheme of things, cycling is not very dangerous. We're talking about only a very small number of fatalities and crashes and injuries compared to, you know, motoring is, we're talking many more people that are getting hurt and injured. The number of cyclists that are hurt and killed every year is really, really small in all jurisdictions. And sure, we can reduce those numbers, but I don't think we should be dwelling on the danger of it. We should be dwelling on the health aspects and the economic aspects and the choice that we're giving people about how the options we're giving them for how to get around town.
Yeah, I appreciate that point. And we have done that on our Outdoor Explorer show a number of times, talked about the benefits of commuting by bike. And I guess everybody on the show today is an enthusiastic cyclist. But the show today was kind of inspired by these accidents and our need for safety. I'd like to go down to Rebecca, who had a question or comment about public school bike safety programs.
Yes, hi. When I went to public school, and this was in the lower 48, and we had more warm days than we have here, but every spring before summer started, we had almost a week-long recess where all we did was bike safety, where they brought out stop signs and they painted the playground, and it was very helpful. I guess I still remember those lessons.
Mm-hmm. So you're thinking of wondering if we're doing it here?
Right.
Well, thanks for the question, Rebecca. That's what I was alluding to earlier with our group that we collaborate with, Alaskans for Injury or Alaska Injury Prevention Center. They're hoping to put together a trailer of about 40 bikes and then all the things you talked about there and take it to schools. I don't know if we could guarantee we'd get a whole week-long recess. I know my son would be into that. I would be as well. But it's a great thing. And as I was trying to emphasize before, we believe that if kids learn about bike safety when they're young, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, or even younger, that they're going to take that information into their driving career. And, you know, I drive a car and I ride a bike, so I don't consider myself in either camp. But I think your point of starting early in schools is great. And I'm happy to report that Anchorage had the most students and schools participating in Bike to School Day last May, with over 2,500 students and 60 Anchorage schools in the district participating. And I believe Chief Mew got to ride that day as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I've done it 2 years now in a row. Right. And I'd add on to what Steve said there, we certified all of our school resource officers, sent them through the LCI school. Their league certified instructors is what I'm saying in bike safety and so forth. And they're qualified to teach bike safety classes. And we did it specifically so when this trailer and all these bikes got put together that the school resource officers could be part of the ongoing bike safety classes that would be taught in the schools.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like the Bike to School Day also has an impact on drivers, because you're sort of more aware of bicyclists. You see a lot of bicyclists, and that maybe changes your outlook a little bit. Thanks for that, Rebecca. That was a good comment. Let's
Thank
go
you.
Down to David, who had something to say about bike trails and window tints. David?
Yeah, I've commuted over the years, both for pleasure and out of necessity. I've been hit by cars in those scenarios that were described earlier, where they're trying to make a right turn and they're looking the other way, and I'm very diligent about waiting until I get eye contact. But there's been a couple of times where their windows are tinted and I can't see under their car. And I'm wondering if I thought that there were guidelines as to how dark the windows could be. That was one question.
As far as let's take that one before the other one. I mean, that goes to your eye contact thing. It's hard to make eye contact if you can't see the person.
Yes, we do have right. a window tint law, and there is a degree of light transmission that is the threshold for that. And the officers carry a tint meter that they can put on the glass to see whether or not it's legal. And if it's not, we write a ticket. And so, yes, we do have that law. We do enforce it. There are citizens who are actively trying to get those laws loosened up. They want more window tinting right now, and the Assembly's been hearing something about that. So if you want less window tinting or want to keep the bar where it is, which is fairly restrictive in Anchorage, now would be a real good time to talk to your Assembly person.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, David, do you have another question?
Yeah, the other one is in regards to those. I often have to play the devil's advocate when friends are complaining about what somebody mentioned earlier, where there's a bike trail adjacent to the road, and yet here's the bicycler in the lane instead of using the bike trail. What sometimes they can't see is that often motorists will throw bottles out their window, and instead of course, hitting the road where they're at, it's sailing over into the bike lane. So there could be a field of glass on that bike trail that's adjacent to the road. I've encountered that a few times, and I'm wondering, is there a number you can call to have somebody come over and clear trails, or is it just something that's done by a schedule? And if so, how often?
Well, the multi-use trails are probably the province of Parks and Rec, I would think, and a call to Parks and Rec would be appropriate there. Hazards in the roadway is probably street maintenance. I hate to sound like a bureaucrat, but you know where the problem is probably dictates the agency that needs to.
Good question. I don't think we know the answer to that, David, but that's a good question. Thanks for raising it. I hadn't thought about calling somebody. I usually just like try to go around the glass. Thanks, David. We got so many other folks who want to get on the air that we're going to move on.
Okay.
And I've got about 10 emails to read as well. Before I would go to Jim, though, I wanted to ask you, Steve, a question. Seems like a big part of safety as a commuting cyclist is route selection. I was in a situation where I had to get to a certain spot, and I went down 36, and it was scary. I got there just as fast as the cars did, because they would zoom past me, and then they stop at the light. I'd catch up with them. They'd zoom past me again. And I realized, okay, 36 is not the right route to take. I need to take a different route. That's part of the whole thing, isn't it? Part of the culture is figuring out what's the safest way to get there.
You know, it definitely is. And we encourage people to try different routes. Maybe you could go out on a Saturday or Sunday and look at ones that might work for you. But we want people to be safe. And so often I will bike on a quieter street that's maybe one or two blocks over. And that gives you more chance to be on the road, but in a calmer area and still get you to your destination. Because, you know, Anchorage is a bike-friendly city, and that's BCA's mission, Bike Anchorage's mission to make it safe and convenient for people to bike. And we've got great trails, but the trails don't work for everybody. You know, if you're going downtown, eventually you have to get off. And so that's why I'm happy that there's a new bike lane on A Street, for instance. But it does take some practice and some figuring out. But it's something that is healthy and great for all of us. And one thing I did want to mention, that increasingly in big cities around the country, millennials are attracted to cities that have bike infrastructure, because that's something they want. So as Bike Anchorage and other groups participate in the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation's Live, Work, Play campaign, a way to draw new, vibrant young people is to make our city more bike-friendly with infrastructure improvements.
Turning to you, Steve Durand, as a planner, I would think that, I mean, you can't necessarily make every street in the city perfect for bikes, but you can look at the network and try to make a reasonable number of commuting routes safe that are parallel maybe to major streets. And I know we've done that in our commuting plan here in Anchorage. Does that make sense? Is that something that you do nationally, is think about the less intense streets and how to parallel the major streets?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. We talk about them as neighborhood greenways or bike boulevards. And neighborhood greenways become more popular because they're really for walking as well as cycling. And so we try to find routes that are parallel to arterials. But, you know, a lot of destinations are on arterials. So we also need to make good connections to, you know, the library and the stores and the other destinations that are out on arterials. So making a good citywide, all ages and abilities network is really important with good connections to destinations around the community. And we're seeing cities and towns do that all across the country.
Yeah, it's an exciting change, and I think it's a generational change to some extent, as as people sort of look at us as a transportation mode. Let's go to Jim, who had a comment about lack of respect of cycling culture is what I'm seeing on the screen. Jim?
Yeah, I just want to remind folks that cycling is great fun, and it's the most efficient machine that humans have ever invented. But this lack of respect and operator distraction is a big issue. And people think that, you know, when they get to be 16, well, you lose your license to bicycle, and if you're not a real person, you don't get you get a driver's license when you turn 16. And so, and a lot of people that are cycling don't have a driver's license because they can't get one. And so it taints their, you know, gives the rest of us a bad name. But I just want to encourage people to, you know, wear a helmet, bright clothing, flashing lights that don't blind others, a rear view mirror, a bell or a horn, and a flag, and a polite attitude. And I like your idea about identifying the routes, because they do keep some of the bike lanes open, like I think it's A Street or C Street. And I pick my routes, and, you know, I even in the winter, I ride all year long. And I just hope that they get more, you know, respect for cyclists. I know a lot of people get angry at us and want to get a license, but that's not practical. Then the skateboarders and all that I have to have. I mean, it doesn't make too much sense, but I like the idea of that those intrusions on having some kind of access over them, because I've noticed that I think that's for parking is what it is, but if they just had a up ramp and a down ramp to get across those intrusions. And there again, educate people to the rules, because I've had people pull across, you know, pull into a gas station on a bike route, and a guy jump out of the car and say, "You're not supposed to be riding that bike on a sidewalk. You're supposed to push that through the walkway or whatever." And I just wish people would realize that what the rules were.
It is a very emotional issue, and I find it interesting that it's as emotional as it is. I don't know if any of the panelists want to jump in on why people get so worked up. I've got about 10 emails that we need to get through, some of which are, it would take me the rest of the show to read the whole thing.
I'll just say quickly that it is emotional, but I want to emphasize the fun side of it too, which mm-hmm. Jim started out with. It is fun, and Bike Anchorage encourages people to ride with fun events, whether they're social bike rides around town or once the first Friday events, or we give out coffee and treats to commuters at last Friday of every month. So there's a lot of fun to be had, and we want to encourage people to have that polite attitude that Jim talked about and Chief Mew talks about, you know, giving a thumbs up or a wave when people are polite, whether you're a cyclist or a driver. And so cycling is fun, and we can make it more fun by making it more safe.
Mm-hmm.
I throw in that I think the vast majority of cyclists and the vast majority of drivers are fine people that are doing their best to make this work. On the driving side, there's a handful of people that firmly believe that cyclists are not to be on the roads, and they think it's illegal. And I got to say, there's a number of cyclists that are like little anarchists, and they think that no rules and laws apply to them. We got to work on both those attitudes.
Right. And hopefully for people of goodwill, just want to make it all work. We give them facilities and sort of the knowledge that they need to make safe. Leslie sent an email saying a bicyclist do not deserve all this blame, and points out that a city is not designed to always put cyclists in safe places to get around, but there are real things we can do to change this. Safer streets are better for cyclists, pedestrians, and drivers, so we can also make smarter decisions, and that we need to look at Anchorage as a whole to make that a reality. We also have a question from Maggie. Could you discuss when it is appropriate for a cyclist to take the lane? Although this is sometimes the most safe thing to do, motorists don't seem to understand that it's legal, and sometimes the safest approach for a cyclist in traffic. And when we talk about people getting mad, if you are taking the lane and you're slowing people down, they do get mad, and it can be scary. Chief Mew, I mean, essentially the cyclist has as much right to the lane as traffic.
The cyclist does, and contrary to what a lot of people believe, that's nothing new. That's always been the case. In fact, it was cyclists that pushed for paving roads 100 years ago in this country. And that's how paved roads got started, was for the cyclists. They've been around a long time using the roads. Now, me personally, I will tell you that I'm pretty comfortable riding in traffic, like in downtown Anchorage. The traffic there is slow. You can make the lights pretty easily. I feel comfortable being elbow to elbow with moving traffic. I'm not so sure that I like riding down the middle of Tudor Road at any time of day. Mm-hmm. So I tend to choose, even though it's technically legal to be on any of that, I mean, I would plan my route to, as Steve was saying earlier, there are some roads that I'd prefer just not to be on.
Oh, is it really legal to, say, be on a limited access road like Seward Highway and just take the lane as a cyclist? That seems suicidal almost.
Oh, like a freeway?
Yeah.
As far as I know, cyclists aren't allowed on the freeway.
Yeah, good. Okay, I wanted to clarify that.
But I would like to say that there's a difference between, or there's a contrast between having a driver be mad and then having them know you're there. And when you're predictable and when you signal that you're going to take the lane and you do take the lane, that's safer. And while they may be mad for the 10 seconds or less of delay, it's safer for the cyclist, and that's a way to share the road. And I, as a driver and a cyclist, I know that the reason that traffic is slow isn't because of cyclists. At 5 o'clock today, traffic's going to be slow because of all the cars that are on the road.
Right.
Well, as I said, while I don't get in the road too much, I also must say, when I've signaled my intent and I've had moved out for a reason and use hand signals, the drivers don't seem to mind at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're talking on Hometown Alaska today about bike safety in Anchorage and the how we keep from having cyclists get hurt and make it a good place to get around on a bike. Steve Cleary is with us from Bike Anchorage, Chief Mark Mew of the Anchorage Police Department, and Steve Durant from Oregon is with Alta Planning and Design. Kelsey has sent us an email asking about the 3 feet law that Chief Mew talked about, that we have to vehicles have to give cyclists 3 feet space when they go around them. She says, as an avid cyclist who is frequently brushed by cars or honked at simply because I'm seen as a nuisance while riding on the road, I often feel defenseless, and it would be good to have some kind of defense on our side, even if retroactively. I.e., she's saying, well, what about the ability to take pictures and cite people after the fact if they go too close to bikes? How do you enforce this law? Is this something where the officer has to see it and be present in order to enforce it?
Well, there's a technical answer to that question, and there's a practical answer to it. If you had evidence of any crime or infraction and there wasn't an officer present, technically, legally, you could bring that information to us. We could conduct an investigation and issue a citation or get a warrant or something after the fact. That's a lot of after-the-fact work, and I don't want to say that our detective division has been shrinking over the last couple of years. We're having trouble keeping up with robberies and burglaries and things like that. So doing after-the-fact investigation of minor traffic offenses probably isn't practically going to occur, but legally it could. So if an officer sees that, the officer is empowered to stop the person to make a traffic citation. What we have been doing lately is sending people letters when motorists have reported to us that we've seen they call on cell phones. They say, I just saw this traffic infraction. If we have a driver or a unit nearby that can pull that person over, we'll try and do that. If we can't, we are writing those drivers. We got the plate. We're writing them letters telling them, okay, we're not giving you a ticket, but we want to let you know that people are complaining about your bad driving, specifically this date and time. So, you know, we can do those sorts of things as well.
Mm-hmm. So we have had a number of emails on this topic we were talking about earlier of motorists making a right turn, so they're looking to the left at the vehicle traffic and maybe don't look to the right, and the cyclist is coming along, and the importance of making eye contact. We have an email from Brad who talks about the need for both parties. It takes two to tango, and as a cyclist, if the driver refuses to look up and make eye contact with you, you're kind of stuck, and I guess defensively you just have to sit there. I'm just wondering, Steve Durant, from a design perspective, this particular issue seems to be one that leads to a lot of accidents. Is there anything that can be done about that to make that aspect of cycling safer in terms of this right-hand turn and you don't look both ways?
Yeah, I think it's really important for all the roadway users to know what the rules are and operate safely. Of course, having good geometry for the layout for roadways and bike lanes and bike facilities is important, and making sure that people can each other. And when you've got a facility that's curved, for instance, you've got to give people an opportunity to have safe stopping distance. And all of that is codified in various design guidelines that the roadway designers are using every day to create facilities. But making sure that people are looking up and not distracted by their devices or dog in their lap or whatever is, probably more important even than the facility design.
Mm-hmm. And it's also important to, again, this would be a good opportunity to take the lane. So if you are out in the lane, then that's where a car is more likely to see you. If you're on the sidewalk and they're making a right, but they're only looking left, then, again, you're a pedestrian, as Chief Mew alluded to earlier, and you do need to take the time to walk. But if you are out in traffic, that's where a car is going to be looking for traffic, and that's the safest spot for you to be in that situation.
So from the cyclist point of view, you can't, just because you're biking doesn't mean you could get to ignore stop signs. It doesn't mean that you can breeze through. You've got to stop. And if you're being a pedestrian, you get off and walk across. If you're being a vehicle, you stop and use the traffic signals as you would if you were a vehicle. But there's no case where you can just breeze through.
Correct. Yeah. And I'm saying that if that car is making the right-hand turn, if you're a vehicle, you're out in front of it. Mm-hmm. They're going to stop behind you.
Right.
You're going to go, then they're going to make. And if you're heading straight through the intersection, that means you're on the other side of the road, on the right-hand side, and you're a vehicle just like mm-hmm. they are. And so you would avoid it in both those occasions.
So we've just got a minute left. Winter is coming. And I just wanted to get a quick sense of, is it different, Steve Cleary, when you're riding in winter, are there different issues you have to be aware of? I mean, it's slick. You obviously know vehicles have a harder time to stop. You have a greater probability of falling. Do you deal with it differently in the wintertime?
Definitely. You need to plan for more time. You need to be more visible, and you need to be more aware, because the street clearing isn't always happening. And, one good advantage of Anchorage is that you can put your bike on the front of the bus. So if it does dump 10 inches, you can jump on the bus. You get a flat tire, you can jump on the bus. So I want to make sure that commuters know about that. It's a good way to get around. But as Chief Mew will likely point out, you need to be more predictable, more visible, and even more vigilant in the wintertime.
And lights front, back, yep, in every direction. Yeah. Well, it's been a very quick hour, and I've learned a lot about getting around safely on a bike, and I hope we haven't completely discouraged folks, but gotten some good information out there. I want to thank each of my guests, Steve Cleary of Bike Anchorage, you just heard from, APD Chief Mark Mew, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Steve Durant from Elta Planning and Design, thanks for being with us from Portland.
Thank you, and have a safe time out there.
All right. Next week on Hometown Alaska, I'll be your host again, Charles Wolforth, to talk about the minimum wage initiative on the November ballot, looking at raising the minimum wage in Alaska by $2 and putting it to the highest level in the country. We'll be voting on that in just a few weeks. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Monica Gokey is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.